Pigeons took flight above them in soft, startled explosions of wings. Susanna gasped. Her face wore the dismayed expression of a devout woman who has just heard her husband blaspheme in a cathedral.
Eddie, stop it! Stop it!
Eddie couldn't stop it. His mouth was smiling, but his eyes glittered with a mixture of fear, hysteria, and frustrated anger.
You and your monorail girlfriend, Patricia, will spend a luxurious month in scenic Jimtown, where you'll drink only the finest wine and eat only the finest virgins. You sh...
Eddie broke off, looking at Susanna. He was at once sure that it had been she who had shushed him, not only because she had already tried, but because she was the only other person here. And yet at the same time he knew it hadn't been Susanna. That had been another voice, the voice of a very young and very frightened child.
Suze, did you?
Susanna was shaking her head and raising her hand at the same time. She pointed at the intercom box, and Eddie saw the button marked Command was glowing a very faint shell pink. It was the same color as the mono sleeping in its berth on the other side of the barrier.
Shh, don't wake him up,
the child's voice mourned. It drifted from the speaker, soft as an evening breeze. What? Eddie began. Then he shook his head, reached toward the talk listen switch, and pressed it gently. When he spoke again, it was not in the blaring Robin Leach bellow, but in the almost whisper of a conspirator.
What are you? Who are you?
He released the button. He and Susanna regarded each other with the big eyes of children who now know they are sharing the house with a dangerous, perhaps psychotic, adult. How have they come by the knowledge? Why, because another child has told them, a child who has lived with a psychotic adult for a long time, hiding in corners and stealing out only when it knows the adult is asleep, a frightened child who happens to be almost invisible. There was no answer. Eddie let the seconds spin out. Each one seemed long enough to read a whole novel in. He was reaching for the button again when the faint pink glow reappeared.
I'm Little Blaine,
the child's voice whispered.
The one he doesn't see. The one he forgot. The one he thinks he left behind in the rooms of ruin and the halls of the dead.
Eddie pushed the button again with a hand that had picked up an uncontrollable shake. He could hear that shake in his voice as well.
Who is the one who doesn't see? Is it the bear?
No, not the bear, not he. Shardik lay dead in the forest many miles behind them. The world had moved on even since then. Eddie suddenly remembered what it had been like to lay his ear against that strange, unfound door in the clearing where the bear had lived its violent half-life, that door with its somehow terrible stripes of yellow and black. It was all of a piece, he realized now, all part of some awful decaying whole, a tattered web with the dark tower at its center like an incomprehensible stone spider. All of Midworld had become one vast haunted mansion in these strange latter days. All of Midworld had become the drawers. All of Midworld had become a wasteland, haunting and haunted. He saw Susanna's lips form the words of the real answer before the voice from the intercom could speak them, and those words were as obvious as the solution to a riddle once the answer is spoken.
Big Blaine,
the unseen voice whispered.
Big Blaine is the ghost in the machine, the ghost in all the machines.
Susanna's hand had gone to her throat and was clutching it as if she intended to strangle herself. Her eyes were full of terror, but they were not glassy, not stunned. They were sharp with understanding. Perhaps she knew a voice like this one from her own Wen, the Wen where the integrated whole that was Susanna had been shunted aside by the warring personalities of Detta and Odetta. The childish voice had surprised her as well as him, but her agonized eyes said she was no stranger to the concept being expressed. Susanna knew all about the madness of duality.
Eddie, we have to go, she said.
Her terror turned the words into an unpunctuated auditory smear. He could hear air whistling in her windpipe like a cold wind around a chimney.
Eddie, we have to get away. Eddie, we have to get away. Eddie, too late,
the tiny mourning voice said.
He's awake. Big Blaine is awake. He knows you are here, and he's coming.
Suddenly lights, bright orange arc sodiums, began to flash on in pairs above them, bathing the pillared vastness of the cradle in a harsh glare that banished all shadows. Hundreds of pigeons darted and swooped in frightened, aimless flight, startled from their complex of interlocked nests high above.
"Wait!" Eddie shouted. "Please wait!"
In his agitation, he forgot to push the button, but it made no difference. Little Blaine responded anyway.
"No, I can't let him catch me. I can't let him kill me, too."
The light on the intercom box went dark again, but only for a moment. This time, both command and enter lit up, and their color was not pink, but the lurid dark red of a blacksmith's forge.
"Who are you?"
A voice roared, and it came not just from the box, but from every speaker in the city which still operated. The rotting bodies hanging from the poles shivered with the vibrations of that mighty voice. It seemed that even the dead would run from Blaine if they could.